idea in my mind to share. As Rick mentioned, I'm a college professor. I've spent a bit of time over the years working with undergraduates, and being also a retreat teacher, I also spend some time with some older adults who actually, believe it or not, wrestle with similar issue of making choices in their lives. So there's some useful thing here and there in what I'm about to share, and see what you take away from it. We face life choices throughout our lives. We tend to think that that's just for young people, because that's most prominently featured, right? College student, think about, or before college, which college to go to, which major should I take? My students constantly agonizing it. Should I go to grad school? What career should I pursue? And we focus a lot on it as if when you're done, when you are graduated from college, you get a first job, you're done making choices. And of course, those of us who are older know it doesn't end there, right? We have to decide once we get our job whether to stay on this job or whether we should pursue a promotion, and how to balance the demand between work and other responsibilities of our lives, such as families, our community, and also different part of our family, you know, the family we marry to, and also our birth family. And of course, we have to decide whether we should pursue a love relationship, should we maintain this friendship when it becomes too much of a drain on our time, or maybe we should, if we marry, we have to decide whether I should have children, and how many, and how involved I should be in their lives, you know, what kind of parenting will I practice. And when you get to midlife, you're almost done with raising your kids, meaning they're going to college. You're not quite done, actually. And then people talk about a midlife crisis. Really, it's talking about they didn't expect that they have to make choices at that time still. What should I do? Should I stay with this direction of my life? Should I keep doing what I've been doing? Do I need to make a change? Should I make a change? What should I do? And when should I retire? And it's a time that we might find ourselves needing to take a serious look at various aspects of our lives to see if we have lived a life maintaining a balance that we had hoped to, being true to our values and priorities, or have we gone way off course in the midst of busyness in our lives. So whether we need to make adjustment, is it too late? Do I want to? Choices, choices, choices. And all these choices would affect whether we live an authentic life and be fulfilled, or get lost in life and feel unsatisfactory and unfulfilled. And I have met people well into their 70s feeling very much so. So the journey doesn't end. So in the title, we talk about making a difference. That's always the first question I get asked by my students. And I think everyone, not just the college students, want to be able to make a difference, because that's how we feel. We get to live a meaningful life. Many people make the assumption that making a difference, meaning having a certain kind of job, right? It's easy for us to think that, oh, well, if I become a doctor, if I become a social worker, I become an advocate, I make a difference, I can make a difference. So many of my students think about pursuing that line of work. However, it's a mistake to think that only a certain kind of career path offers ourselves the opportunity to make a difference. If you think about it, every job, every role in our society has its function. If we do it conscientiously with the intention to bring benefit to others while making a living, we are making a difference in our own way. So recently, my brother did a big job renovating his bathroom. And he was so happy he met this contractor who was a very conscientious, honest contractor, does really good job, finished everything, cleaned up the place, come back and tell him everything, how it works. And what it did is it brought him peace of mind in the entire process. He didn't need to sit around wondering if he had been cheated, if his bathroom is going to work. And this contractor made a difference by being good at what he does and being honest, diligent conscientious contractor, right? So we might have these misconceptions about only certain kind of career path can make a difference. Like we have someone who come and take care of our lawn. He's a godsend. It makes it possible for me and my husband to be away from home a lot of this summer. I haven't spent more than a week at home this summer. And it's possible because this is someone we can trust, be rely on to do a good job. And so it allows us to free time up for our family, for me to come and do some volunteering task. This person, even though he is mowing a lawn for a living, is making a difference. So we can make a difference regardless of what we do, as long as it is something that is right for us in our skill, in our temperament, and our life circumstances, what our life circumstances allow us to do, so that we can devote ourselves to doing a good job, fulfilling the functions of our position that is meant to be, to contribute to the society, to our community, to those around us, to those we serve. So it's now we sorted out this making a difference business. How do we be me, being me, being true to ourselves? This is a tricky one. It's easy for us to think about being me, meaning be selfish, not worry about what other people think. But really, it's about knowing ourselves very well. So we need to ask hard question, honestly. What is important in my life? Now, listen to this question very carefully. What is important in my life? Like not what should be important in my life, or what other people think is supposed to be in my life, but what is important in my life, what I believe is important, and be very honest with ourselves, and allow ourselves to go anywhere and be very honest. We might be inhibiting ourselves from coming up with certain answers because that doesn't sound socially acceptable. That doesn't sound good, right? Is it material comfort? I am always, you know, I'm always, and my people say, it's important for me to have, you know, to have enough money. Good for you, so that you know you need to have a job that make enough money, right? You know yourself. Very good. Is it to be part of a community? You don't want to work alone. Or is it to be prominent in a profession, to make a name, to leave a mark? If that's important for you, you want to know that. Or is it to be able to innovate, to go somewhere that no one has gone? Or is it to devote your life to your family? Very important to know what it is that is important in your life. And of course, I'm asking you to ask yourselves, and all very often, especially those who are still young, but actually when you're older, I get people coming to ask me this kind of question all the time. What should I do with my life, even when they're older? Now, other people's advice, maybe parents, mentor, friends, or things that we read, stories of people who inspire others, they can serve as a reference. But we need to be true to our values and our priorities, because it is your life. Other people are talking about what's important to them, they share that with you. But what is important to you? And their values and priorities may be very different from yours. So even though these are people we respect and love very much, our parents, our mentors, ultimately, it is our life, your life. So you need to take responsibility. You need to take responsibility of it. We have to take responsibility of the consequences of our choices. You need to ask yourself, am I ready to take responsibility? Or are we listening to other people's advice to avoid taking responsibility for our life? So that we can say, oh, my parents want me to become a doctor. And later on, when I'm not happy, I can always blame my parents. So that kind of thinking. When we ask ourselves what is important in our life, it's not that straightforward, actually. We need to really know ourselves in an honest way so that we know clearly what is not acceptable and make us feel miserable based on our own personality and temperament. And what is the ideal situation? Like, is perfectly fine. Oh, you'll be great if I get this job, you'll work at this place and do this. And also, what is acceptable if we have to compromise? If we don't get the best case scenario, what is acceptable? How far are we willing to compromise? And where's the line? So when we know what is unacceptable, all these questions can only be answered when you have a clear sense of your own values and priorities, as well as our own habitual tendencies and strengths and limitations. The last part, knowing our own habits, our own strengths and limitations, very important. For example, many people may be ready to say, oh, I'm not a materialistic person, I don't need to make a lot of money. You know, I want to do something that make a difference and it's meaningful. I hear my students say that all the time. But what they really mean is that, well, I don't need to live in a mansion and drive a Jaguar. It's okay. I don't need to drive a Mercedes. But they think, their standard is to live a comfortable middle-class lifestyle, which is no small task. They might have taken it for granted growing up in their middle-class parents' home. But that too requires well-paying jobs. That might require quite a bit of education, right? You probably can't get away with just doing odd jobs part-time and have that kind of lifestyle. So what are we talking about when we say, I'm not materialistic, when we say that? Or another example I can think of, I remember when I was in college, I was very involved in a drama club, and one way to make use of what I learned in drama club, being stage manager and so on and so forth, was to get into the film business, to become a production assistant. And I had the fortune of being an extra on a film project and watch firsthand what a production assistant work is about. She has to get up super early before everyone else, take care of everything, and go to bed after everyone else has gone to bed. And 3 hours later, she has to wake up and do it all over again the next day. Even though that sounds very exciting and very appealing to me, I knew better because I cannot live on 3 hours of sleep. And so I just gave up that idea, right? So what I want to convey is something may sound really good, theoretically, in the abstract. What's the reality of it? How does that reality match up with our strength and limitation? How we really are? We can say, oh, you know, if I really want to do it, I can work it, and then I just can, you know, make myself live on 3 hours of sleep. Maybe you can do it for a week, for a year, but how realistic is it? So engaging in meditative and contemplative practices allow us to gain more insight into ourselves and our habits, our tendencies, so that we can actually take a really honest look at ourselves, knowing that you know, that sounds really good, but that's not really for me. Okay. So such meditative practices also help us cultivate clarity, help us see clearly the consequences of our choices, that there are trade-offs, however much we would like to have it all. We hear nowadays people, you know, career, have my family and this and that. Yes, we can have family, we can have career, but decisions we make every day to devote our life to achieve more in our career will mean foregoing opportunities to spend time with family. Because however brilliant you are, you only have 24 hours. Remember that. And this might mean missing family gatherings, maybe making your vacations with your family shorter. Maybe you're on vacation, but you're on your computer working, being on phone conferences. They all have consequences. They all affect your family life. Of course, it goes the other way around too. When we decide to devote more time to our family, then less time will go to our work. Now we can say that, oh, I'll learn how to meditate so I can work more efficiently and have better time management. I can probably make myself sleep less and then make up for all of that. You can try it and that might make a little bit of a difference. But we may still find that, well, we might be a little slower than our colleagues who can devote more time of their life, more time into their work. We might be slower in generating the same results compared to them. And that's inevitable. What that means maybe is that we might be putting ourselves in a slower track in our career, which may mean our house is less fancy, our vacation is less grand than those of our friends or maybe our siblings who make more money, who have more advancement in their career. Are we able to accept that? Or are we going to turn around and blame it all on our family for taking so much time out of our career? So before we make those choices, do we know clearly the consequences and ramifications of our decisions? Or are we fantasizing that, oh, I will somehow make it all work, right? Doing so is not as easy as it sounds. It's easy to fantasize about the best case scenario or to have unrealistic estimates of our ability to achieve the impossible. It's particularly difficult because we live in a culture where we are surrounded by stories of very unusual people. I read about people who only need 3 hours of sleep a day. So they obviously can work 5 more hours every day than other people. And they might be able to achieve a lot in their career and have a full family life. But is that your situation? Are you willing and able to see it clearly, honestly? So we may find the story of these people very appealing, very inspiring, that everything is possible. Now, everything is possible theoretically. But when we bring it down from the abstract, we need to reassess it with what is possible based on our own circumstances. Maybe our physical ability. Can you live on 3 hours of sleep, for example? So this requires our honest understanding of our own limitation and actually accepting these are my circumstances. Are we able to accept that we are an ordinary person? I'm not a superhuman. We might like to fantasize about being a superhuman, being special, not being ordinary. We might be brilliant, we might be hardworking, but we are human. Accepting our ordinariness is no ordinary task. And that's why it is recognized as a great achievement in Chan practice. True Chan practitioner know clearly how ordinary one is. After an honest reflection of our values and priorities, strengths and limitations, then we have a sense of the general direction of our life. Perhaps you know the career you want to take, maybe the mix, the balance of career and family life, but there are still lots of choices to make. So here, I want to talk a little bit about it's important to find this balance between being focused and committed to a path we have identified and being open-minded and curious. This is the part about curious in the title. So I'm sure there's no shortage of information that you have learned along your way about being committed, being focused, right, on the path you have taken. not going to be talking about that. I want to talk about being open-minded, staying curious. You might like to think about taking advantage of the existing opportunities in your current situation. We have the habit of thinking, okay, this is what I want to do, and these are the courses I would like to take, or these are the people I like to meet and make connection with so that it will help my career advancement, so on and so forth. And they are missing, and that's what we are striving for. Meanwhile, we completely forgot to pay attention to who is right here in our life, the opportunities that are already right here for us to take advantage of. So I would like to encourage you to check out things that are right here in front of you that might seem to be unrelated to your interest or goal or the current path that you're pursuing. Not only would you learn something new and broaden your horizon, it may also allow us to shed new light on what we already love to do. I want to share a personal example. I'm a sociologist, but I'm a theorist, and I mainly work on revolution and state breakdown. And so I don't teach sociology of gender at all. Right? So that's not my area. And earlier this year, there were Gloria Steinem, some of you might have heard of her, a very prominent feminist writer, came to our campus. And at first I was like, I don't do gender, you know, why go to that talk? And then when I saw myself thinking like that, you know what, I maybe should go to her talk. And it turned out that her talk is in the time slot I actually am available. What an amazing thing. So I went and got the last ticket available for that talk. It's full house, and it had been a life-changing talk for me. She talked about her life and led me to go and read her newest book about her life. And as an organizer, and she in that book and in her talk, she talked about the consequences of a bunch of people who decided not to vote in the election prior to the 2000 presidential election, and how it all contributed to George W. Bush ended up being our president, and all the things that happened after that. And it really helped me see the consequences of our action. And actually, non-action, because it's the consequences of a bunch of people deciding not to do something. It was very important, and it also affected my Dharma teaching as well. So I encourage you to take advantage of opportunity right here in your life already, and also to make positive connections with others by being sincere and curious. Instead of we might think, oh, you only need certain important people, they're useful network for tie for me. But actually, all kind of people we run into in our life, we have things to learn from them. So we learn and practice to be curious about their path. Everybody had an interesting story, how they have lived their life. And learn about their worldview. Maybe their worldview is very, very different. They might have extremely different political views, and we usually avoid talking to people like that. Like, it's very upsetting to talk to people who vote differently from you. But actually, those are valuable opportunities for us to learn how people from very different backgrounds think and understand their perspective. And in fact, people who are very different from us, they probably are in very different network. And those ties can be very valuable to us, if you ever heard of the study or the very important sociology paper called The Strength of Weak Ties. It's not the people closest to us that can put us in valuable opportunities. Very often, actually, people we have weak ties with who might have connection to people who are very different from ourselves. So I learned a valuable lesson from my opportunity to attend the Generation X Dharma Teachers Conference. I was a little bit hesitant. I was like, these people I don't know, and how is it going to turn out? But I use my practice. I go and make friends with people who teach in very different Buddhist traditions, and they became great friends, and they opened many doors for me that were entirely closed previously for me. And so instead of focusing on not being about how to instead of focusing on how we're not getting to know the important people you want to know, keep an open mind so that we can notice that there are many people right here around you in your current circumstances, who are willing and can help you in surprising ways. So while it is good to be focused on what you have chosen and committed to do, like I'm not saying not to do that. You committed to graduate school study. You want to commit your effort and time into it, or maybe your major, or maybe your career path, whatever it is. Yes, you devote to it. It will serve us well to also cultivate and maintain an open awareness of other opportunities right in front of our face. Perhaps things we have passed up, things that we have said no to many times, dismissing them as irrelevant to our path. I want to share a personal experience in graduate school. Of course, it's a focused path. I need to pass my exams, write my dissertation, get my doctorate, go get a professor job. That's what everyone was told. Do that. Don't waste time doing anything else. That's what our professor told us to do. And I was doing well in graduate school in terms of my academic pursuits, but I was feeling a little bit lost. I remember what happened was I had a friend, she was going to Aikido classes. Well, Aikido, nothing to do with my getting my doctorate, right? But I thought, you know what? I should take a chance and go check out that Aikido class. And I didn't stay with Aikido, but what I did was it opened this completely new world of energy body work that people do. And even though I didn't stay with Aikido, it allowed me to connect with a guy I met that year who was interested in Qigong, and because I could understand what he was talking about and respected that. And this person became my husband. And not only that, he also was the person who led me to Master Shen Yan, who, of course, led me down a wonderful path of practice and also making choices that had worked out very, very well for me in many different ways of my life. So we have no idea allowing ourselves to be open-minded and take a chance, do something different, seemingly irrelevant to our focused path. And if we find ourselves resistant, we might like to ask if there is fear of losing focus, if there is a fear of losing focus underlying this resistance, is this over-focus a coping mechanism to the inherent uncertainty of life that we are holding on to a rigid program to feel secure? Last year at a retreat, I met a guy who was super focused, and he achieved everything he was told he was supposed to achieve, successful business, family, everything, by his mid-30s, and find himself completely lost. He ended up in our retreat to find his way. So how do we do this? It's very important to have time to ourselves. It's easy to get overextended, overscheduled. Having time to ourselves allow us to have the opportunity to see into our mind, to know clearly whether we are making the right choices for ourselves, rather than fulfilling other people's wishes. This takes courage, being true to ourselves. So here, being ourselves, being true to ourselves, does not mean being disrespectful or dismissive of other people. But we think hard and long about our choices and take full responsibilities for the consequences of our decisions. We are taking our life seriously. When we live authentically, we make a difference just by being ourselves, because we engage in our job, whatever it is, in a way that we are fully committed, devoted, with our heart and mind. I still remember a few years ago, I was in the U.S., we have this AAA, an automobile club, and I went in there. I can't quite remember what I was there for, but the lady who worked there made a great impression on me. She was so dedicated and so helpful, and I talked about her in my Dharma talk. This is someone who is taking her job as a Bodhisattva path practice. And I have a friend who's a doctor, and recently he had to be the one who write up a report about the tragic death of a firefighter in accident, and he spent days and days making sure that he recorded and everything meticulously and doing everything, doing all the tests that's needed, because he knew the court case is going to be difficult and he wanted to make everything clear so that not people won't be hurt. The way we do our work reflects the fact that we are living authentically. And in that way, we make a difference, whatever profession, whatever line of work we get into. And even though if we don't work anymore, I had a friend who told me her father was retired for a long time, and he's in his 90s, couldn't really get around much anymore. But he spent his day contemplating, reflecting on his life, learning from it, talking about it with his children from time to time. And she learned a great deal from what he did, how he spent his time, even though other people may feel sorry for him. Actually, he was content. And so in his own way, he was making a difference, inspiring his own daughter, who herself, of course, is aging herself. So here's my talk, and I hope there's some bits and pieces that's useful.